everyone. I'm Evelyn.
And I'm Lara. We are the host of Once Upon a Niger podcast, where we take you down history lane as we break down stories about people, places, and events in Nigeria's past and present.
That's right. In every episode, we will take you on a journey of our own discoveries as we feed our curiosity and connect with our heritage. Join us to figure out how the chronicles of the past can help write tomorrow's tale.
Have we started?
Let's start again.
Listen. Hi, Evelyn. How are you?
I'm good. I have a question for you, actually. I have a question on this. I've got a scenario. So what would you rather be in? Would you rather be stuck in a romantic comedy with your enemies or in a horror film with your friends?
Do you know what I hate the most in this life? I can't watch horror films, you know, because I want to throw my slippers at them through the screen. I'm like, something's chasing you. Why are you stopping to have a conversation? Why are you, you know, you see this friend and then one person is hugging the other one and then somebody makes a stupid move. And I think I would kill my friends in the horror film.
Wow.
I think I'll just leave them behind, to be honest.
Yeah.
Because I'm just like, I don't have to save my life. I don't have time for all of this. You know, people do the silliest things in horror films. I always get frustrated when I watch a horror film where they're doing silly things. So what would I rather get stuck doing? A romantic comedy with my enemy?
Yeah.
There's no love. Romantic is that...
So you don't even necessarily have to be like the romantic interest, but like all the cast are your enemies. Like the entire cast are your enemies.
I don't want that kind of bad vibes. What's that? Where I'm surrounded with people who are my enemies. No, I'd rather be in the horror film
with your friends.
With my friends. You know, leave them for the zombie to eat them if necessary. But at least we can all make an attempt for our lives and try to escape. But I'm not about the bad vibes now.
No, okay.
Yeah. What about you?
I think I would want to be. Yeah, maybe a horror film with my friends, because it's tough work trying to convince somebody to love you and they're your enemy.
But you said you didn't have to be the romantic interest.
But yeah, but like just enemy from all sides, you know?
Enemies within, enemies out.
Yeah, I think I'd want to be in a horror film with my friends, and then I would be the person that has sense. I'll make sure that we're not... Like I say, listen, it's not today that we will die.
Do you have time? When a zombie is chasing you, or zombies are chasing you, I hope they're friends that have sense, that I'll be stuck in the horror films with.
I would be so focused. I feel as though I'd be like a really good like soldier. I'll be so laser focused and I would get everybody, and I'll be like, listen, if you're gonna survive today, yeah, you're gonna listen to what I have to say.
Imagine you have that friend who falls down and is like, and it's like,
I would clap them so hard. I said, you better get your act together so that we can make it out, because it's not we're not going to die here, you know.
You're being too sensible.
Oh my word.
I've seen this film too many times, and in my head I'm just like, listen, I will leave you there if you don't get up right now.
Yeah, you know what, that's probably even more inspiration, because when they see that you're leaving, they all of a sudden know
exactly
how to run.
Exactly. I don't have time.
Yeah, don't know how
we to all run. Gotta be alive, so tough love.
Yeah.
But anyway, speaking of love, want to show some love to our listeners. I found out the other day just how many listeners we have across the world. It's quite surprising.
Yeah.
But you know, we have listeners in, let's see,
you gotta start listing them off the way Whitney was listing off all the people she was you know, there's this video clip where like Whitney has won an award. I can't remember if it's a Grammy or BET.
Whitney Houston.
Sorry, I'm saying like I know her personally.
She's saying like she's your friend. Whitney.
Whitney, like who else could I be speaking about? Whitney Houston, she won an award, I think it was a Grammy or BET or something. And then she starts listing off that, and she's like, Priscilla, David, did it. So that's why you need to list all the countries.
And they didn't throw off the stage.
People just looking at her like, girl.
Girl, you better hurry up.
Yeah.
So, I mean, UK, you know, we kind of hope and expect that we would have UK listeners and Nigeria and the United States. But perhaps the most surprising is the fact that we have listeners in Ethiopia, in Bulgaria, in Singapore, in Poland, in Costa Rica, in India, in Russia, in Pakistan.
I'm telling you, like,
In Hungary, yeah.
I definitely feel as though if it isn't people using VPN to listen to the podcast, I can also believe that, you know, well, the listeners don't necessarily have to be Nigerian. They could be,
of course,
could be Ethiopians listening to a podcast about Nigeria. They could be Polish.
But I'm just surprised they found us.
Don't be surprised.
And we haven't heard from them yet. How is that? Yeah, they're showing us love from afar.
Yeah. Well, we're grateful. I don't know how to say thank you in Polish. I don't know how to say thank you in the languages that are in Ethiopia. But thank you
very much for listening. And apparently we have more men listening to us than women.
Interesting. It's an interesting ratio there.
No, but we just want to let you know that we see you. We spot you in our analytics. And we just want to say thank you. And we want you to write to us, you know, wherever you're listening from, you know, write to us. Let us know who you are, what you enjoy about the show, or about the pod, what you would like us to talk about more, what you found interesting, what you've learned so far. It'll be very encouraging for us, actually, because we've been really encouraged just by seeing
the vast array of where this podcast is reaching. But in today's episode, we're continuing on in our film reviews. And last episode wasn't the greatest, but this episode, I start this one with jubilation.
Yay!
I start this one with joy. I think we're reviewing today the film 93 Days about the Ebola pandemic and the specific response by Nigerian healthcare professionals in Lagos again. Actually, it was, you know, the last film was about Lagosians. This film is about Lagosians again, and the incredible work they did in staving off what would have been a catastrophe in itself, but a true and even greater catastrophe if the Ebola virus had gone widespread.
Someone said it would have been apocalyptic.
I'm telling you, and I really think it was. So for our listeners who may not have known much about the Ebola epidemic that occurred, so this happened this happened from 2013 to 2016, and there was an outbreak in West Africa, and the Ebola virus is a very terrible virus that attacks the system, and a lot of the symptoms like vomiting, diarrhea, and they can often result in fatalities, and they often did. So the outbreak started, this bout of outbreak started in, and then it spread to other parts of West Africa, Sierra Leone and Liberia, and Liberia was hit really hard.
Yeah.
They had about 3,000 plus deaths from the Ebola virus. And then, you know, through unknown ways of contact, the virus was then brought unknowingly by a man named Patrick Sawyer into Nigeria. Ooh, Lara is giving me one side eye when I said unknowingly.
I have questions.
Wow.
But we'll get to that.
But yes, Patrick Sawyer was a American-Liberian diplomat, and he came to, and he was displaying, I'm not sure if you would call them flu-like symptoms, but he was displaying
like malaria-like
symptoms. Yeah, that's it, malaria-like symptoms. And he was sick, and then through various testing, it came to be known that he was carrying and he was suffering from the Ebola virus. And that is what the film 93 Days is about. It's about the discovery of Ebola in Nigeria and the response of the healthcare professionals at the private medical First Consultants Hospital. And it stars Danny Glover. So for those film buffs,
I actually don't know who he is.
So even when you watched it, you didn't recognize this guy's face. Danny Glover, he's in... Why have I forgotten that? He's in the film with... I hope I'm not confusing my black people. He's in the film with Mel Gibson. I was going to say Samuel L. Jackson is in the action film Die Hard with Bruce Willis. And then the other similar action film, like around that time that came out, was the Mel Gibson film with Danny Glover. And that film, what was that called? Can't even lie, it's left me, you know? Because there were a lot, it's, you know, 90s action films, they were very similar at that time. And those are two similar films because there was like a white, all-American lead. I mean, Mark Gibson is Australian, but in the film, an American lead. And then you had like the black sidekick. And that's who Danny Glover was in the Mel Gibson.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not really a fan of action movies, so.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so you're not really impressed by that.
So that's probably why I don't know. I mean, I like a few, like, if, yeah, certain few ones stand out, but I'm not really, it's not the first thing I would look to when I want to watch a film. Yeah. Okay, yeah. I mean, it was a good film portraying the realities of the 93-day period. From start to finish, hence the name of the film, 93 yes. Days.
So the Ebola outbreak in Nigeria lasted for 93 days. But I would say in terms of like a review and first thoughts of the film, I think the quality of the production, it was truly refreshing to watch 93 Days after having had to watch The Herbert Macaulay Affair. And it shows me the skill capable within the industry. Like, I don't think it was like a perfect film. I don't think the acting was like spectacular or anything.
But it didn't need to be spectacular. No. That was the thing. It just needed to be realistic.
Mm.
And that's I think for me, that's one of the positives of the film, in that it was just human. Mm-hmm. Like, it was a very humanistic redemption of the headlines. Like, you know, so you've seen all these headlines about Ebola, all this stuff that happened, and you just needed people to kind of bring it together in a way where it's like, it brings it home. And I think they didn't over-dramatize it. It wasn't like, although there's some people saying that it was melodramatic and stuff.
I do, yeah, you know what, and I agree. I think when the film started, it felt as though I was actually about to start watching the action film that Danny Glover was in. I was like, the music was, I think, quite dramatic in the start. And I thought, oh no, I'm not sure about this. Mm. But as the film progressed and you started to meet the heroes, quite frankly, I then thought, you know what, I'm actually okay with this overly dramatic music, because what the doctors and the nurses were doing at that time was truly brave. They really were heroes. And I was like, you know what? Give them the drama. Give them the drama. Like, they give them the dramatic music. Like, that's the weight of, you know,
the action.
The action. And yeah, I was really impressed by it. I think the actors and actresses, they did like a fine job. And I think the story was well written. I think that's one of the things that's helpful about depicting something that's more recent, because you do have so much more information.
Yeah.
And there is a very clear timeline of how things progressed and occurred. So I think it's easier to, you know, write a script based on. But yeah, the film director and producer, Steve Gukas, I believe, I think he did a really good job in bringing this film together. The shots were, you know, decent quality. It was even filmed actually at the hospital where the discovery of the virus was made. And I think, yeah, the film was just a really great like love letter and a great testament to the sacrifice that so many made.
Yeah. And I think, to be honest, if in 50 years time, for example, somebody picked up this film and they wanted to watch it, like a Nigerian, because I can imagine, again, Nigeria being Nigeria, hopefully things would have gotten better by then. But if Nigeria continues the way it is at the moment, I think this film in a way has immortalized these people in a way where, you know, a child, a teenager finds this film online, or in whatever metaverse in the future, and watches, I think it'll be a decent depiction of a moment in our history where, unfortunately, a few people had to give their lives, or their lives were taken or they lost their lives rather in the cause of saving many.
Yeah.
You know, ultimately, they sacrificed their lives.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so I think the film for me, you know, there's not really much you can thought about it because number one, I think because of what the story is about. And number two, because they actually genuinely did have good actors. You know, one of the notable actresses there was Bimbo Akintola. And I was saying to you, like, in any film that I see Bimbo Akintola, I'm almost always assured that it's going to be decent.
Mm-hmm.
There's also Simkele Idalama, I think, I don't know how you say her surname. She's also a decent actress. And all the other people who were in the film, you know, I think they all worked really well together and they were in sync, actually, especially the health professionals in that film. And it was a 2-hour long film though, which it was quite long, but I think I didn't watch it thinking, oh, they could have done without that part. That part was not necessary. I felt like it was 2 hours of content that was necessary.
Yeah, to build that.
To
build the emotion.
Yeah.
To build that connection between the audience and the characters, I suppose.
Yeah.
I think they left enough dramatic moments and I was really moved by this film. I actually cried watching it because quite frankly, I mean, we've spoken a little bit about, you know, what we think of the film, but quite frankly, the purpose of this film is to remember the good work that was done at First Consultants. And I'm just really grateful and really thankful that, you know, Dr. Adadevo was insistent and she obviously, like, this isn't historical fiction. This is real life. Dr. Adadevo is a real person was a real person. And she was the doctor that realized that Patrick Sawyer was displaying symptoms that weren't consistent with malaria.
Before we get there, let's go back to the beginning. Let's play this out so that when I come to my conclusion eventually, it's going to make sense.
Okay.
So rewind.
Okay.
On this fateful day in Lagos, Nigeria, okay. Murtala Muhammad Airport.
Okay.
This man arrives,
mm-hmm.
you know, whatever, I don't know what area, I mean, was in the baggage area or when he was, you know, giving his passport to the immigration officer, he collapsed. He fainted.
Hmm.
What do you do when somebody faints? You take them to a hospital.
Yeah.
And this man wasn't just any man. He was a ECOWAS official, which mm-hmm. meant that he had like diplomatic privileges or whatever. And normally, when you take them to hospital, you would have to take them to like a government hospital.
Mm-hmm.
But guess what? Nigerian government hospitals were on strike.
Hmm.
So this is like... It's like God was really at this thing from the beginning. Yeah, God was in this from the beginning because if the Nigerian public hospitals were not on strike,
right?
Imagine what would have happened.
I see what you're saying. Okay, yeah,
and
you
I,
go.
And so that's number one.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe Patrick Sawyer did not realize this when he was coming to know with his plan because I think they had a plan. Anyway, number two. So then they took him to the First Consultants Hospital. And this is where, because it was displaying signs of like malaria, you know, and he tested positive for malaria as well. So the first doctor who tested him confirmed, you know, gave a diagnosis of malaria. And then Dr. Stella Adadevo was actually the second consultant who saw him, I think the next day, and said, it looks like malaria. It feels like malaria, but this is more than malaria. And they were asking this man, have you been in contact with anyone who had Ebola recently? He said, no. Are you coming from, you know, have you been to a country that had Ebola, you know, recently? Mm-hmm. Those kind of like standard questions. He said, no. But guess what? His niece had just passed away from Ebola. He was coming from Liberia. He said he had come through Togo or something of that nature.
Mm.
This is why I'm thinking there's more to this story, this Patrick Sawyer guy, than what was...
And I don't think that was actually mentioned in the film. Did I miss that? Did they talk about his journey?
I don't think they did. No, they didn't. But it later came on in news reports that, mm-hmm. you know, this was the case. And it was actually well established that his niece had passed from Ebola. His niece had passed away from Ebola on the, like, maybe less than 2 weeks before he came to Nigeria. That's how bad it was, right? So anyway, eventually, Dr. Adadevo thought, no, this is, you know, let's just be safe. We don't know what her thought process was, but she was being very prudent,
mm-hmm.
and she was being very professional. And she said there are symptoms. I think he was then starting to display other symptoms that were similar to Ebola, despite his denial of being in contact with anyone who had the Ebola disease. So then they had to test him. And again, you know, we're going to start to see some pitfalls and some holes in the institution and the fact that, and the reason why I said God at the beginning was because Nigeria was not ready for this disease.
Not that it's ready now.
Not that it's ready now. Even with COVID, right?
Mm.
Nigeria was not ready. So in as much as I think they're going to have their own compliments and things that they eventually did as a...
That they had a good response?
As a response, their response to the matter. But I think the fact that they could have put certain preemptive measures in place at the very beginning, right? Because this man sat on the plane with people. He didn't, you know...
That's crazy.
He sat on plane with people. He went through checkout. He was on the queue with other people. So the fact that...
And they didn't get it.
They didn't get it. It's highly
infectious.
It's still baffling.
It is actually very... It's a highly infectious disease as well.
So now they took the test, and I don't think Nigeria even had the labs facilities to do this, to conduct this test. I believe it was sent to Senegal, and that was where the test was conducted.
Yeah.
And then they got the results, which then confirmed that he had Ebola. Then it became a case of, okay, we have to treat you, blah, blah, blah. I don't know if you want to talk about what then ensued afterwards, what Patrick Sawyer was like. Because what did he come to Nigeria to do in the first place? He came to Nigeria he was going to a conference in Calabar.
Yes, he was. I don't actually know what that conference was about.
It was some sort of ECOWAS. That's why he was a diplomat, or he was a government official from Liberia. He was coming to a conference in Calabar. And so it seemed like he was in transit.
Yes.
So he was meant to then go off to Calabar in that journey. And so now here is a man in the hospital who is clearly very sick. But then the report that we then have is that the Liberian government were, what's the word? The Liberian government were basically saying to the hospital, you have to release this man.
Yeah, they didn't want him to stay
in
the hospital, which I found so incredibly strange, because your country is literally like buckling. It's literally collapsing under the strain and stress that Ebola, the havoc that it's wreaked on your country. And I think because Ebola was largely contained within West Africa, a lot of people in the West, in European countries, in the US as well, I don't think they understood how awful this disease was. Because when you're sick for like from 2 days to like 3 weeks. And the mortality rate is very high.
Yeah.
So, it has a large range. So it can be from like 40% to 90%. Which is extremely high. And I don't want to be gruesome for gruesome sake, but like if you are nearing death when you have Ebola, you know, internal bleeding starts, and then you'll start bleeding from like your eyes and your ears. You'll start hemorrhaging. It's a very awful and painful death. So when your people are going through this very brutal thing in Liberia, and then when people who have suffered with Ebola die, you can't even bury them in a way that will bring any closure or is dignified, for the family. They have to be cremated, because the dead body is even more infectious than when they were alive. So the body has to be cremated immediately. So if you think of how quick the symptoms can occur, and how quickly people can die from Ebola, and then you have no sort of vaccination or proper response to this. People are dying at a very quick rate, and then you're having to burn bodies at a very quick rate. So that the fact that you will then come to Lagos,
yeah,
of all cities, the
commercial hub
of all cities around the world,
yeah,
one of the most densely populated cities in the world,
over 20 million people living in that city, as like, at that time, I'm sure at it's that increased. Time.
And can we just like, let's remember living, not just like working and yeah. in the city and like commuting or whatever, yeah. living in London. We have, I think, how many people are in London? Like eight, like London. Live in London. Yeah. No, I think it's roughly like 8 million. Mm. But then people who like commuting or something, I think during a day can be double that or more. Mm. So imagine all the people that are commuting, especially in London, but they're
multiplied by five.
They're living here.
Mm-hmm.
The rate at which the disease could spread, and the film really rightly highlighted that the Nigerian population, you got Lagos, you got the population of Lagos 20 million plus, then you got the population of Nigeria 200 mm-hmm. million plus, and then Nigerians, as we said earlier on in this podcast, they're everywhere. They're in Poland, then Ethiopia, then
Costa Rica,
Korea, Japan. Listen, I'm sure there are Nigerians in Kazakhstan as we speak today. They're everywhere. And then you're thinking Nigerians are flying in and flying out constantly. There's a large diaspora in the UK and yeah. the US.
So it wouldn't have just been a problem eventually for Nigeria. It would have been everybody around the world.
Everybody around the world.
And I think I really like that you set the scene. And this is why I really bat an eyelid when it kind of presented like, oh, this Patrick Sawyer guy just wandered into Lagos not knowing he had Ebola, you know, innocently, you know, with the Liberian government insisting that he get... Look, as an employer, because I'm assuming it was some sort of employment with the Liberian government. As an employer, on a basic human level, if I send my employee to another country and I hear that they're unwell to the point that they fainted and they had to be admitted in the hospital, I'm not going to be thinking of what conference they're going to. You know, I can easily send another person to go to that conference if it was so important.
Mm.
But knowing fully well that this man, the track record that he had in the days leading up to him coming to Nigeria, and then we want to claim innocence. I don't know if I'm towing the line of conspiracy theory here, but it sounds like a duck. It looks like a duck. And I'm thinking it very much is a duck, because it's just like something, there was probably more to this. And if you ask me, and I'm sure other people at the time when this was still out, is like, maybe they wanted to infect Nigeria. Maybe there was a conspiracy.
But what would be the motivation for that though?
Because misery loves company.
Oh no, that's a different level of wickedness though.
Because but it doesn't make sense. If it is true that they told you, your employee has Ebola,
mm-hmm.
we can't release them. And they were even saying to the hospital, we're going to sue you. We're going to do this. Mm. The Lagos government has to step in and be like, no, we're not going to. I don't understand. Like, on a very basic innocence, you know, whatever level,
That basically the reasoning or the story we've been told seems naive.
Yeah, it just seems naive. It seems like, you know, somebody wants to just, I think there's more to it, you know. And unfortunately, people had to die in this process. And although we celebrate the fact that the fatality wasn't a lot, like it was 8 people who died, I think it was 8 people too many.
Mm.
They didn't have to die. And I think sometimes the problem with Nigeria and our attitude towards life, like we don't appreciate human life in Nigeria. The Nigerian government does not appreciate human life. I think if that had happened in the UK or America or something, I don't know, I'm just speculating based on how things are done. I don't think the Liberian government would say, in the, like, one of your employees is here, on a mission. He's got Ebola, and we're saying he's got Ebola, and then you're telling us to release him.
Mm.
And you would do that? Nah, come on. And so this is why, for me, I'm looking. I think there's more than, you know, than is beyond the surface. But kind of, so that's like why when you started off earlier, I was raising my eyebrow, because I'm like, listen, you don't want to get me started.
Yeah.
On what I think about this. But anyway, let's go on to kind of highlight Dr. Adadeva's quick response and just her expertise and professionalism with the whole situation. So, yeah.
Yeah, so she recognized the symptoms, and she was insistent with her colleagues that Patrick Sawyer shouldn't be released. And please, we do encourage you, like, watch this film. It's available on Amazon Prime. I think it's available on Netflix. Do watch it. There's a scene where she is in the office with two of her colleagues, and they are insisting that he should be released, because they're thinking, actually, do you know what? This is before the Liberian official was harassing them. they are saying, protocol says that Patrick Sawyer wants to leave. He wants to leave against medical advice. We should release him. He's tested for malaria, and we can give him medication that will help solve that. And she was like, my gut, like, I feel as though that's what essentially what she was saying. She was like, my gut is telling me
there's more.
Okay, maybe I shouldn't say the gut, because she was actually being diligent. Mm. She was like, his symptoms, you men are saying it's malaria, but his symptoms are not actually corresponding to symptoms of malaria. And I think that intuition, and the fact that she trusted her actual judgment.
The spirit of excellence. The spirit of excellence was upon that woman. And do you know why I also emphasized the point that the public hospitals were on strike? Because let's play the exact same, and I'm not saying that doctors in public health hospitals are not professional or they don't have the spirit of excellence, but the frustration that led them to be on strike in the first place, it's the same level of frustration that they work with every single day in Nigeria. So imagine this person, you know, is brought to the hospital, malaria, they've treated you. You say, oh, I want to go. Liberian government, they say,
They'll say, what's my own?
Just go.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Every possibility is that they would have released him.
Mm.
Also, every probability is that even after they detected that it was Ebola, they might not have had the equipment. Because remember, I think Dr. Adadeva quickly had to improvise before they even had like the right equipment. Yeah. She had to improvise the protection that her team were using before they could enter the rooms, all of that stuff. She really was very proactive in that. And I don't think the public hospitals would have had the same, you know, not to denigrate the people who work there, but I don't think they would have had the resources that they needed, either the time resources or the just the luxury of like working in a hospital. Because I imagine First Consulting Hospital, being a private hospital, has a bit more than what other public hospitals had. So they wouldn't have had that luxury to be dilly-dallying and trying to, you know, deal with this one person when they have other patients that they have to address. So this is why, you know, painting all the things we've done so far and the scenarios, we start to understand the significance and what could have actually been an utter decimation of life of a whole nation, literally speaking. So yeah,
it really does. Sorry to go on the point, but it does really terrify me to think of what could have happened, because those images are actually just quite disturbing to see, like, bodies being wrapped up in bags and then thinking that they have to be like cremated. Like, at the rate, if it had gotten out and it was not contained, the rate at which it would have had happened in Nigeria would have been you know, at the beginning of the episode when you said that somebody said it would have been apocalyptic, it would have been like those films, you know, we've seen, like the American film Contagion. You know, I don't know if you've seen that, where it shows how, you know, pandemics actually, and so it stars Matt Damon, Kate Winslet, Jude Law, and it's actually very spooky because when you watch that film, you're like, that is exactly how COVID-19 it's actually very scary, you know, how similar the film is to what happened in our most recent pandemic. Yeah, so I think that like you said, that insight, that quickness and a willingness to do the job and do the job well.
Yeah.
Because there are also, you know, unfortunately, sometimes there's just this attitude of like people are not recognizing the urgency of some things.
Yeah.
So people just want to dismiss, you know, things. They're like, listen, I want to continue my day. I'm trying to make money. I'm trying to do this. Like, don't bother me now where you're telling me I have to go and do extra work when I'm in a country, in a nation that's already frustrating me. Like, you know, and you know what else is also ironic is that if anything, the corruption, the poverty and the poor governance that led to the strike is probably the thing that even protected the country.
Yeah.
And that's obviously not like a justification for it or anything, but that's even like a very sad truth, you know? If they had not been striking, and I mean, maybe that's why we need to strike more often. You don't know what else you're...
There's a divine intervention, I'm telling you. Because we can't even encourage striking more often. Because, you know, how do we know what calamity is going to come upon us? Mm. It's only in hindsight you can look at these things. And hindsight is a wonderful thing. You look back and you think, wow, it was a good thing that X, Y, Z happened in order for ABC not to occur. And, you know... But in giving credit to the Nigerian government in terms of their response, in terms of, you know, then, you know, tracing the people that could have possibly come in contact with Patrick Sawyer, setting up the, I think it was called the Prevention Center or something of that nature. So like, but then even, I mean, again, it's almost like one compliment, one criticism. Because then the Yaba infectious hospital, you know, center that was set up, it was in such poor condition. Such poor condition, because that was where the doctors and the eight people or even more of them who were infected from the hospital, who where they had to be quarantined and stuff. And, you know, it's just like we don't have a good control infection disease set up in Nigeria. And so It was an act of God, really, if you ask me, that this thing did not go beyond what it did. But the Lagos government did, you know, they invested money, they invested a lot of money in then sensitizing people, in getting, because apparently even some healthcare workers didn't want to be doing the all contact tracing and stuff. They were too scared because nobody wanted to catch Ebola. So they had to like incentivize them quite heavily to take on the job. And then the work of sensitizing the people, the locals, the Lagosians about this stuff. And we also have to commend the work of the media in also sensitizing. And there was a campaign with like notable Nollywood actors coming together, encouraging people about their hygiene and, you know, just different things. But you know what? Something as basic as access to water, to clean water, because they were saying, oh, wash your hands, this and that. And that was when they were starting to install some pitiful tanks, some, you know, where people can marketplaces and stuff. And like, these are things that should be there, because any kind of disease can descend upon this nation at any time. And the same thing with when COVID happened, it was then that they started, everybody now started running, you know, here and there, trying to put things in place. And actually, funny enough, I was watching a YouTube video earlier on talking about Ebola and in the marketplace. And this woman was saying, Ebola is not our problem. She was saying in Yoruba, we need water. We need clean water. It's the Hausa man that comes and supplies us water. But the man who was translating for the TV news station was not translating correctly. So he was then saying, oh, so the woman was saying, oh, we don't have water. We don't have clean water, blah, blah, blah. I think I'm going to insert that clip into this pod just because I was just like, what? That's not what she said. He was like, oh, you're something like we're scared of Ebola. So he just kind of like made whatever she was saying to fit the narrative of whatever it was that...
That's crazy. That
the thing, yeah. It was not, I'm like, it's either you don't understand Yoruba, therefore you should not be the interpreter of this particular, you know, woman, or you're just not, you know, you're just being silly, because that's not what she said.
What kind of foolishness is that?
Actually, I saved that video, because I was like, this does not make any sense.
Okay, insert clip.
Yes. But, you know, all this kind of, like, basic amenities that would be preventative, that would kind of help to solidify our preparedness in the future... You know, it's still not there, but at least we can say the government did something.
I think there's a couple of things maybe before we round off in terms of, I think there is one thing that's an interesting phenomenon though, is that sadly there were a lot of deaths in Liberia and they couldn't handle the spread of it. But when I think more generally, though, I actually think that African countries, there is a better communication of public health and the importance of public health among citizens. And what I mean by that is, you know, you go to, if you've traveled around the continent, you actually see very regularly that there's regular instruction, like wash your hands. Like in a lot of public places, you'll see signs that say like wash your hands regularly. They will talk about the response like to HIV, like, you know, practice safe sex, use condoms, etc. Because you want to prevent getting HIV, etc. So I do actually think there is this culture. I think there is a certain level of a certain culture that does encourage people to try at least to encourage behavior that will protect the larger population. And I think that may be a contributing factor to why perhaps I'm not like a epidemiologist or whatever. I'm not that, but there may be some contribution there in terms of why, like COVID-19, for example, didn't spread, or as far as we know, the rate at which it did, and we didn't have as many, again, in terms of reported deaths of COVID-19.
I think that's an act of God. that COVID-19 did not strike the whole of Africa. I see the point you're making in that people are, I mean, aware of like the hygiene and what they need to do, and it's kind of like, well, but it's almost like theory without practical, because the reason I say that is in the marketplace, you know, they're saying wash your hands, blah, blah, blah. But where's the facility to enable what you're preaching? So we have a sermon, but nobody has provided us with the practical things we need to implement this, you know, this sermon, as it were. So I agree, and I think a lot of it is just due to practice, because I feel like, yeah, generally, you know, people are a bit, you know, they pay attention to their hygiene and all that stuff. But I feel like the government, or the unfortunate state of a lot of African countries, is just that many cities, towns, villages just don't, people know what they need to do, and they would often self-govern where they would try to put certain things in place for their own communities. And especially at the height of this sort of breakouts, you would see people really coming together to put things in place that the government ought to have put in place, that ought to be part and parcel of their community. So I think this is why the failure of the government often is not highlighted as much as it should be in this sort of season. So it's like, oh, you know, we didn't have as much COVID, you know, the government did what? No, the government did not do jack. They just, you know, the people were just very self-preservative.
Yeah. If anything, it's in spite of the government.
Yeah. But before we run off, I wanted to touch upon a very human point in this film. So we've talked, obviously it was quite sad that people died, but there was a woman, there was a person in this whole thing, the nurse, who it was her first day at the job at the first consultant. I believe her name was Igono. I think that was her name. It was her first day. She was pregnant. She was a 32-year-old woman. And she just was unfortunate that her first patient, or, you know, on the first day, the first contact she had was with Patrick Sawyer. And, you know, it was a really, really heartbreaking moment knowing that, because it could have been any of us. And this is literally the thing. It could have been anybody, you know, somebody's first day at work, somebody, you know, just passed something, you know, someone who just got married, going off to their work. And it's just, and yeah, so it was just, it was really heartbreaking. And even her husband, in an interview that I was watching, said he lost his job because when his wife caught Ebola, his employer then sacked him because they were scared that he was infected, because he was infected. But then obviously there was then the stigmatization that he was probably going to then infect his colleagues or whatnot.
Right.
And so he was, so he had more, he had a ripple effect of some sort.
And that's the unspoken, or not necessarily unspoken, but that's the impact of these epidemics and pandemics that, you know, sometimes you don't also take into account. It's like the social and economic fallout and disruption that occurs because of that, which is also really, really difficult. And yeah, it's you know, economically speaking, and even now, you know, with the, we're now starting to feel the ramifications of what COVID-19 and lockdown has done. And, you know, the world, quite frankly, the world is feeling it, like, economically. So, and I think, you know, we're hearing more and more about diseases that are running loose and get into community. So it's something that we definitely need to think more about as, like, individuals, and like keeping our governments held to account, you know, because it's really important. Like, that's their job. It's literally the job of the government to keep its people safe from any sort of threat. And it's actually in the interest of the government to make sure that its populace is healthy. Even from a purely economic standpoint, you must invest in public health so that people can go and work. If we're going to live in this capitalist system, you need healthy workers. So, yeah, I think, and obviously, like, I'm sure, like, many of our listeners, like, appreciate that and know that. But yeah, I'm really grateful to all the health workers that do, like, risk their lives. They really, like, we're living in very scary times right now, and they're risking a lot, and they don't have the resources, especially public health infrastructure doesn't have, like, the resources.
And speaking of consequences, just before we run off, there are consequences for a country that fails to put in place the right infrastructure for its health system. So what you have now is a group of doctors, nurses, health professionals leaving the country, and this brain drain where Nigeria is going to get to a point where we don't have the right professionals with the right skills and the knowledge to build the kind of quality healthcare system that is required to have a healthy populace, like you just said. So Dr. Stella Adadevo was a woman of excellence, and I'm sure as well as other colleagues who unfortunately passed away, but we can't, her leadership cannot be
underestimated,
because in 2012, when swine flu was also making its rounds,
I think that was the last, especially in this UK, that was the last time that this country was even happy, because it was Olympics.
Oh yeah,
there was no swine flu at that time.
No. So maybe in 2002, she was also the first person to detect swine flu in Nigeria. She was the first person to detect it. And it's like, this is the caliber of woman that we have lost.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we are losing many more every day. Maybe not to the hands of death, but we're losing them to other countries who are going to cultivate them, reward them, appreciate them for everything that they've got. And we're going to be left with nothing. And this is it. This is just a simple fact. It's happening every day. So the next time, heavens forbid, there's going to be another outbreak, are we going to have a doctor, a nurse, a consultant of the same caliber on ground, ready to abate the situation.
Yeah.
So, food for thought.
Food for thought. And we know, obviously, our listeners, we're all thinking about this. We're all thinking about this. But yeah, just, I guess this episode is just a compliment and a way of showing gratitude to all of the healthcare professionals around the world who, risk their lives. They're willing to serve people, care for people in very scary situations and scary times, and like even risk their family, you know? So this is a massive, this episode is like a massive thank you.
Thank you.
To all of you who, risk so much, like, every day. Yeah, I guess that's how we all finish today.
Yeah, that's how we'll finish. Yeah. Thank you. And, to our listeners, again, please do subscribe, share, like.
Lara's been saying support the ministry. Last year, she was even telling you to share the gospel.
Support the ministry. Share the gospel of What's the Pod of Nature podcast. Would it be so bad if you subscribed?
And with that, we leave. Ciao for now.
Bye, guys. So, guys, thank you for listening to this episode. We hope you enjoyed it and learnt a thing or two.
Yep, you can find our episodes on Spotify, YouTube, Apple, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. If you want to keep up with us in between episodes, you can follow us on Instagram at Once Upon a Niger.
You can also find links to some further reading and information about the episode's topic in the show notes. If you want to encourage, collaborate, or as I like to say, support the ministry, drop us an email at onceuponaniger@gmail.com. Bye for now.
Bye.